Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Hey everybody, John Manuel and Hudson Belinsky here with you at Baseball America and our Facebook Live here at on our Baseball America Mag Facebook page. Obviously, we're all decked out, as usual, in our baseballism gear. I wanted to remind you that all of our podcasts and Facebook Lives are sponsored by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. If you're a baseball fan, you need to check out baseballism.com or visit their retail locations in Cooperstown, New York, Scottsdale, Arizona, and their new locations in Chicago and Atlanta. Visit baseballism.com and enter the code BA2017 to save 20% off of your order. And Hudson, today's also a great opportunity, if you don't already subscribe to Baseball America, to subscribe to Baseball America, either online at baseballamerica.com or to the magazine, especially online today. Our list of top 200 is out for the 2017 draft. About a week from now, we'll have the top 100 scouting reports. A week after that, another 100. A couple weeks after that, the full 500.
Mox, so it's crunch time. We got everything coming, and it's sort of this whole year-long coming to fruition, and now we're getting these really thorough breakdowns of these players, and we get the full picture. And it's the class is starting to crystallize a little bit. Teams will have meetings in the next few weeks, and they'll start to really tell us where they fit. But right. The class is starting to crystallize as far as who these guys are as players.
I think, Hudson, every year you could write, if you were writing this overview of the draft class, you could write, that's a bad draft, there are no players, can't find players. I feel like we've written that story, but the thing is, you could look back at these drafts, and I was like, oh, they were players. They were major leaguers. So I don't want to go into that boat. I will say that the consistent and I think the complaint that makes the most sense that I've heard from scouts and evaluators about this draft is the lack of separation, that there haven't been as many players who came into the year as projected potential top 10 picks who've stepped forward more. There's been a steady line, maybe a slow progression, but there hasn't been a guy like, say, last year, Nick Senzel, who made a really big step. He had a great cape. You were hoping he'd make a big step, and he made a big step. He wound up being the second overall pick. And
improved his defense, yeah. Showed a little bit more thump. Yeah, exactly.
I would say to this point this year, the guy who seems like he's done that the most remains Brendan McKay, even though he was the top guy on the college side as a two-way player and was already one of the more accomplished players. It was a consensus top 10 pick coming into the year. Feels like he has made the most strides and the biggest jump forward of anyone who's supposed to be a top 10 pick. Is that a fair way to kick it off?
It's a hard one because, like you said, he's already in there. And, like, the same thing could be said, like, Kyle Wright. Kyle Wright the past 3 weeks has looked like the Kyle Wright you wanted to see.
But he's still 2-3 before that, 4-something ERA.
To your point.
Yeah.
Like, those guys in the top 10, like, and this is what's going to happen when you're talking to those people who make those decisions up top. Their job is to pick everyone apart.
Right, exactly. Right?
But at the end of the day, Brendan McKay is still ranked number 2 in our class for a lot of really good reasons. This is a guy who's left-handed. He's got a plus fastball or an above-average fastball.
Right.
Consistent low 90s. He's got a plus curveball. The worst I've gotten on it is a 55 this year. He's got really good command, pitchability, mound presence.
Pitches inside to his glove side as effectively. I'm not a scout. I haven't seen a billion amateur left-handers. But we do have, over the last like 10, 12 years, from Andrew Miller through David Price and Brian Mattis and Carlos Rodon and these other... Chris Sale. These are the premium college left-handers who get drafted really high. Out of all those guys, Brendan McKay locates the fastball better than any of those guys. He probably has a little bit less velocity than the rest of those guys, but he locates the fastball inside and pitches inside effectively more. I would say his fastball probably plays as well as any of those guys I just talked about at the amateur level.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, the
how much better it can get at the pro level, that's a big question.
Yeah, and ultimately, like, how much better does it need to be, right? Like, I mean, we don't, like, need to dream on this guy being a number one starter. That's right. That's not going to happen, right? Really. Like, this guy, the appeal of Brendan McKay is that he is what he is, and you know what you're getting right away. Like, this, and sort of the some of the criticisms of him are that he doesn't have that frontline ceiling.
Correct. Maybe he's a number three starter, not a number two, or maybe a future number one.
But he's high probability.
Yes.
Extremely high probability. And you start to think about, like, who the best college baseball players are. I mean, I think I was talking to a coach last night about this, and he's like, yeah, this guy might be the best college baseball player in the past 20 years.
He's definitely the most on his way to being the most accomplished player in the Baseball America era. That's the phrase I always use. If he becomes the first-team All-American two-way player, which is not guaranteed because Adam Haseley, among others, having a great year, he'll be a three-time first-team All-American. That hasn't happened since Greg Swindell, who coincidentally is one of the players that McKay is compared to is Greg Swindell. So
yeah.
Physically.
Yeah.
But the only other person who did that is Robin Ventura. So he'd be the most, again, among the most accomplished players in college baseball history. So that has a lot to do with, I think for that level of certainty that pro scouts see of him. He's ahead of these other college pitchers right now, Hudson. Let's go part of the class by part of the class and take some questions.
Mm-hmm.
The college pitcher part of the class, is it fair to say, because I would say the college pitchers, if I'm grading them on a 2080 scale, they've been a 50 this year, and I was expecting maybe plus out of the college pitchers.
I'd probably go 55 on them.
Okay.
I mean, just relative to, like, last year, bad college. The last 2 years, really.
The last 2 years have been brutal.
My first two drafts here, not good college pitching classes.
No.
So I don't necessarily have the same feel for the 14 or 13 classes.
Yeah.
Those are more... I was more localized in my coverage of the draft. So from a national perspective, this is way better than 15 or 16. And I think it's deeper is what it is. Like,
there's good college pitching depth.
That's still true. The second round, you're going to be able to get a good college arm.
I think the matchup that you saw out west a couple weeks ago, Griffin Canning and Luke Heimlich.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great piece of evidence for that depth. Two Pac-12 pitchers who came into the year. I would say that they were both going to be single-digit picks. That we thought Canning maybe would be like a second rounder. Heimlich wasn't necessarily on my radar, but I knew he was kind of like at a 6 to 10 kind of range, depending on what kind of year he had. Those two guys both have a shot to go in the first round now, and Heimlich is coming up on the outside. And I mean, to use a racing term, I'm not even a horse racing guy, but he has had as good of a spring both in terms of performance and production, and then scouting side of it as any college pitcher in the country.
Yeah, I mean, I love Luke Heimlich. I really do. Like, what you're getting with Luke Heimlich is a really good athlete.
He's number 31 on our list. By the way, ahead of Alex Lang at 32, a guy who I think coming into the year we thought could be a first five overall, first 10 pick.
Yeah, I mean, there's also, like, there's ways to think about it, right? Like, the way I sort of think about it, like, we have to do a list, right? At a certain point preseason, we have to do a list. But the way I sort of think about it is we have a group together at the top, and Alex Lang is in that group at the beginning of the year. Tanner Houck is in that group to begin the year. Alex Faedo, Kyle Wright, Brendan McKay.
Yep.
Luke Heimlich was not in that group to begin the year.
Correct.
Right now, Luke Heimlich is arguably in that group.
Yeah.
And the other one, this is like a guy who's pretty much ready to roll. Like, you don't take him and think that you're going to make him super, super much, like, a lot better. He's high probability number four starter. Really, really good performer, really good fastball command, really good athlete, extension, deception, kind of a long breaking ball, but really good breaking ball command.
Yeah.
Didn't see much change up, and apparently that's sort of the consistent.
Stumbling block, yeah.
I mean, and that comes to another thing that we talk about a lot with these college pitchers is their pitch usage.
Yeah.
And how
they're called.
They're called.
Yeah.
And it's, if you look at Alex Faedo, 35 to 40% sliders.
Yeah, JB Bukowskis is that same 40% range.
50% slider. You know, like, a lot of pitches outside of the zone.
Right.
Things like that. So it's maybe not necessarily indicative of what they're going to be and how their style is going to be when they make the adjustment and they're asked to go get big leaguers out. But at the same time, you have to project a little bit, which whenever you have to project, you're a little bit less comfortable in your evaluation.
That's a good way to put it. The less projection involved, the better, and that's why McKay is toward the top. There's less projection involved there.
So when I shake Luke Heimlich's hand and my hand's bruised for a week because the dude grips my hand so damn hard, and his hand swallows my hand, and I know this guy's throwing like 5 changeups a game, like, you got to project a little bit when you're talking about an athlete with really good fastball command. Mm-hmm. Like, some of those things, and the makeup, like, coaching staff raves about Luke Heimlich.
Right.
Talking to Luke Heimlich, a very smart, analytical kid, you know, you kind of, like, you feel a little bit more comfortable projecting in those cases. And I think the big one to discuss in terms of makeup right now, and Lanana wrote the story on Clark Schmidt.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're thinking I was going a different direction.
Well, I was going to say, you have two different ways you can go on the makeup part of it. You have Clark Schmidt, who just had Tommy John surgery, but just 3 years ago we saw Jeff Hoffman, Eric Fetty. That's two recent examples of college right-handers who went in the first round despite Tommy John surgery. Both those guys had a little bit more stuff than Clay.
It sounds like I might not have given Clark Schmidt enough credit when he first did have surgery, and because I didn't necessarily think of him as the top of the class. But I talked to a few scouts this week who were like, "Yeah, he was trending up. Like, would not have surprised me if he went in the top 10 to 15 picks."
We have 36 right now. Before he got hurt, he was 15 on the last iteration, I believe,
I think he was 25 in the ranking, and then he was moving up, and I think you put him 15 to the Astros in the mock.
Okay, that's what it did.
But then you talk about makeup, right?
Yeah.
Like, there are kids who are going to whine and are going to be self-promoters when they're playing well, and then you can't really feel comfortable projecting on. Like, they mm-hmm. have to grow up a little bit. Like, with this guy, like, it's going to be a tough process. That's a difficult thing for a
right.
kid to go through. But you got everyone raving about his makeup. Mike Lanana has done some really good reporting on his makeup.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you have a little bit more confidence that guy's going to be able to overcome his challenges.
And then we do have to mention the Seth Romero. That's the other X factor in this. The pitcher at Houston, suspended for a violation of team rules. I think we know what the violation was, but there's no point reporting on it because it's not public right now. It's still in college. Let's respect the young man's privacy to it.
Sure.
But it's going to hurt him in the draft because Hudson, this guy was, again, trending up. And talked to a scout who was at his alley the other day, 94-96 for 2 1/3 innings.
Yeah.
I will say that him giving up a double to Bryce Johnson of San Houston State helped get Bryce Johnson on our top 200. It just got him back on our radar. We knew the tools. Kind of a 5-8 round range, but then when you bear down a little bit more, it puts him in there. And the wrap up on like how much you think Romero's makeup issues will hurt him, and B, let's segue into the college hitter class. Has that been on that 20-80 scale?
Yeah.
I feel like the college hitter class coming into the year, I thought would be a 40. I actually feel like it's more like a 45. It's been a little bit better, I think, than it was expected to be this year. And guys like Brent Rooker and the way Keston Hura has hit, some of those guys have made the class better than I expected. I thought it would be a well below average or below average class.
So I guess first to wrap up the Romero idea, I talked to two scouting directors about him in the past week or so, and everyone's scrambling to figure out what exactly this is going to mean. Like, is he going to be available in the 20s?
Right.
I don't think so. I think somebody's going to just bite the bullet and say the stuff is the stuff.
To me,
he's left-handed.
As a pitcher, to me, he's very similar to Brandon Finnegan from 3 years ago. And I think a little bit better chance to start, a little bit better delivery than Finnegan. But I think he goes right into the bullpen.
And there's immaturity, and then there's bad character, right?
Yes.
That's very difficult to know. That's the homework
from here.
That these teams are doing right now.
Yep.
Is this a guy who's going to grow up and be, when he's a man, 25, 26, like, going to be more mature? Or is there a character question?
Yeah.
So that's what you're figuring out right now, because those are two very different things as far as taking a player and giving them millions of bucks. And then to move on to your college hitter. The things that we have had in the two classes that I've been here, we've had top of the draft guys.
And we've had some middle of the diamond guys,
and
too.
And we've had SEC performers.
Yeah.
You know, we've had 2015, a really deep college shortstop class.
Last
year, a good college catching class.
Right.
This year, neither of those.
Neither of them.
So, I mean, for me, it's a firm 40, because you have guys who can hit or who are performing, who aren't really tooled up or don't have great defensive profiles. And then you have Jaron Kendall, who's tooled up but is swinging and missing a ton. So, like, oh, by the way, a feature on our site today on Jaron Kendall, you can check
out. The Panda.
The Panda, yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, it, to me, is still, like, a weak class. And you wrote the column last week on it. There's still guys who are going to go really high because they're college hitters and they're safer.
Adam Haseley. I love Adam Haseley in this draft class.
Like, Adam Haseley is just a really good player. Though.
Right.
Like, he's not, no sevens, but I don't think there's any fours either on him. And I think Logan Warmoth is a similar kind of player, not quite the performer that Adam Haseley has been, but Logan Warmoth, if you're in on Logan Warmoth because you think he's a bag of 50s, 55s, maybe you put a 6 on his arm. You know, what he does really well, arm strength-wise, is throwing from different angles.
Yes, and he's got accuracy with that arm strength.
And body control, yep. And really good hands. Like, and another, you want to talk about another makeup guy, him and JB, really high makeup guys on that Carolina team. Can't attest to Miller as much just because I haven't done the work on that, but he is also one who's talked well about.
Yeah, the guy was the recruited walk-on who's turned into this is usually – you usually don't do that with bad character.
Yeah.
It attests well to him
as
well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's good. I have nothing to indicate otherwise. I just don't know as much.
But you're right, the strength of the college class and a lot of the guys outside of Haseley who've kind of emerged are guys like Hura, who was already kind of a guy, or Berger, but those are cornerbacks or a DH in Hura and – who knows what he's going to be in pro ball. And then it's the Rooker. It's Diekman from LSU. There was other kind of cornerback. I'm already blanking on who the other cornerback was. Who was right around. Oh, J.J. Manijevic, Drew Ellis. So it
Gavin
is
Sheets.
Gavin Sheets. So it's a lack of athleticism in the college hitter class that does. It's a definitely below average class. It's really how hard you want to hit it. I guess I'm giving it a little more credit than I probably should. Just that it's been a little bit better than I thought it would be. The high school pitcher class, though, Hudson, this was, you know, the last...
So I might disagree with you on this, because I think it's a solid high school pitcher
class. Oh, no, I was going to say, I think it is. I think it's a solid average pitcher class, and I think, actually, the high school pitching class is trending in the right direction. All the attention gets hoisted onto Hunter Green, and he asks for it because he throws 102 miles an hour. When you throw 102 miles an hour, you get a lot of attention. So let's put Hunter Green to the side right now. That's a whole other show.
Yeah.
The rest of the class does appear to be gaining steam, whether it's Enloe, who was a preseason All-American but started slowly, whether it's Sam Carlson from Minnesota, who as he's gotten into gear and as he's played more games has really been very good. I like the direction for the class the high school pitchers are headed in.
Matt Sauer.
Yes.
Alex Scherf throwing a no-hitter the other day. Like
This is very encouraging for the industry.
Yeah, I mean, the thing, and this is a story I wrote for the magazine a few months back, is like, this is a deep high school right-hander class. The high school righty demographic, one of these ideas is that the opportunity cost early in the draft is too high to gamble on those in a lot of cases.
That's another reason why college bats move up. Those first 15 to 20 picks.
And the depth of them, so we talk about it, so like we talk about a guy like Matt Tabor. Or some of these athletic, taller guys like a Steven Jennings or a Michael Mercado.
Yes.
Those guys are going to be there when you make your second pick. Guys like that.
Those are perfect second or third picks for an organization as a high-ceiling high school right-hander or high school.
And those players improve at a higher rate. And if you take if you use a less risky pick on them, if you take them in the second round, third round, fourth round, 11th round, and give them a little bit more money later. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, if you take them later, you might end up, because of the rate of change with those kinds of players, you might end up with nothing. You might end up with a player that's way better than he was valued at the time of the draft.
Right.
So, like, you don't necessarily have to go target that guy with your first pick in the first round. So, like, and I think that's sort of, like, you see them grouped together in our rankings. Like, because there are, a lot of them fit the same descriptions. Big velo, flashed off speed, aren't consistent, need to get stronger, need to improve their breaking pitches.
But you could see a high school right-hander run being pretty prominent. That could be the most prominent demographic from 20 to 60 in the draft, 25 to 60.
Yeah, and I think somebody will just bite the bullet and take on the risk in the teens. I'm not sure who's going to do that, but when you look at
But they would do it on Shane someone Boss, like Shane Boss.
Sam Carlson, yes. Matt Sauer. these ones who are really trending up, who it doesn't look like are going to be there when you pick next.
Right.
Those ones, like, and especially like with Sauer, we're getting John Lackey comps on him.
Right.
Multiple John Lackey comps on him. 97. With two a better plus face. Breaking pitches.
I'm hoping he has less negative body language than John Lackey. But obviously, you take the negative body language if you get John Lackey performance.
Yeah.
And durability.
Yeah, I haven't seen Sauer this spring, but he was absolutely fine last summer. And that's the other thing, too. Like, we talk about these guys popping up sometimes when really they're all in the same category, right? Like,
right.
Like, Matt Tabor is a guy who is a really good athlete, a little bit undersized, quick arm in the summer.
Really then, quality arm strength.
And he's 88-91, and everyone's like, eh. And I'm like, well, he's really athletic, and he's got a quick arm, so let's not write him off. And then here we're seeing it now. Or Sauer is like that to a lesser extent. Quick arm, but like a really long arm action, like full arm circle, a cross body finish, a little bit of a head whack. Skinny guy, but a good 6'4", 180 frame in the summertime. That is, he's a little bit thicker now. But showed you like a flashy, like a long three-quarter breaking ball, and now it's a little firmer. And he's throwing a slider in the mid-80s and a curveball, and he's got feel for both. He's flashing. He's still a long-term pick there because you're going to have some things you're going to want to fix with him probably mechanically, and he's going to get stronger and continue to fill out. And he might be really, really interesting in 2-3 years, and so you might not necessarily be able to get a player exactly like that if you don't do it at, say, 15 or wherever he's going to end up fitting.
It's going to be hard. And then the thing is that there aren't high school hitters filling this void either. I mean, I know we kind of skipped over Mackenzie Gore a little bit in the high school pitchers. We'll talk about Mackenzie some other time, but the high school hitters, I mean, Hunter Green wants to be a high school hitter, but he is a high school hitter now, but he's not really going to get drafted as a hitter. Coming into the year, I think we thought that Royce Lewis could be in that mix at number one overall. I mean, that's still possible.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. Like, that's the one, like...
So you have a high school shortstop who could go first overall, and I can say...
He's been okay at shortstop.
So right.
Like, that was one of the uncertainties about him, and you'll find guys who don't think he's going to stick there.
Right.
But I think, like, when you just talk about how his feet work, his and another incredible, like, off-the-charts makeup. Like, if we did a best tools for makeup, he'd probably be one for me.
Right.
Like, him, Jordan Adele, like, on the high school side, some of these really, really high character, high work ethic individuals. So, like, if his issues are at shortstop are maybe you don't love his hands, right? Like, that's something that's correctable, whereas you can't really teach foot speed.
Correct.
Like, this guy's like a 70 runner, like with big power, hit a walk-off home run on the last day of the Boris Classic. His high school coach, Brett Kay, who's seen a lot of really good players in the Mission League.
Yes, he has.
Or is that the Trinity League? I think that's Trinity League.
Best high school conference
said, in the said country. He's the best high school player in the country. And when he said that, Hunter Green was right behind him taking ground balls at shortstop, getting warm for the next game.
Right.
So, like, that's his opinion. Obviously, he knows Royce better, but he's also a quality evaluator, so that means something when Brett Kay tells you that somebody's the best player in the country.
Definitely had that reaction last fall from people with the USA team as well. So
yeah,
Royce. So it doesn't feel like it's a great year for high school players up the middle position wise. I feel like the deepest position is high school outfielders, but I didn't want to bang on the infielders without giving Royce Lewis his due, because if he stays at shortstop, he might have the number one overall pick. But the high school outfielder class, that's a very risky demo as well. But it feels like it has the requisite number of toolsy potential five tool outfielders.
Yeah, typical,
really, isn't it?
Talking to an evaluator friend of mine about this last night, and it was just like we had talked about this like 6 weeks ago, and it was like, well, in about 6 weeks, ask me again, and maybe this high school outfielder class will start to crystallize, and we'll have a clear understanding of the hierarchy. And so I was like, last night I was like, remember 6 weeks ago when we talked about that?
Right.
Has that happened? He's like, no. He's like,
it doesn't really happen.
Yeah, it's Bubba Thompson too is one that I think he's 21 or 22 on the list.
Helio Ramos from Puerto Rico.
Yes, I mean, like, Bubba Thompson though, this spring, really good attention that he's gotten, and he has probably a little bit better wood bat track record than a Jordan Adele or Austin Beck, who doesn't have that last summer being injured. Like, Bubba Thompson actually made some good contact at East Coast Pro, was not as authoritative contact at area codes, but PG National, East Coast Pro. Like, there's plenty of wood bat track mm-hmm. record there.
Teach a lot of video on this guy.
Yeah, I mean,
they probably have TrackMan data on him with the wood bat, but they just don't have.
I'm guessing, yeah. I mean, also, area codes, they didn't have TrackMan this year. They had FlightScope, and FlightScope had some challenges out there as they were starting to get off the ground. So I'm not sure as much that everyone has, but this guy's going to be a workout warrior.
Right.
Like, this guy might start to hear in a couple weeks, like, oh man, Bubba Thompson had a really great workout, which is what you'd expect from a guy who's like a 60-70 runner who's showing like plus raw power right now.
That's a guy who'd be a star to workout, no question. Ramos.
Elliot Ramos ran a 6.4 on the workout day of the Excellence Tournament on Tuesday night. I think he hit 7 bombs out in BP. Still struggled a little bit getting pitched around yesterday. We'll see. I have a lot of good sources down there, so I get 3 or 4 calls down there at the end of the week. See how that sort of leads his draft stock. But then you have Drew Waters, switch hitter from Georgia, who's, if you went in on the right day and saw this guy showing power from both sides, running plus, Cole Brannon, a 60-70 runner, guy who's showed some pop with wood bat last mm-hmm. summer, hit one into the ivy to the opposite field at Wrigley Field in the Under Armour All-American game. You have Quentin Holmes. Yes. Quentin Holmes is like...
We have 6.160 reports on this guy? That's as fast as I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's laser-timed and might have been a 55-yarder, but still really fast.
Still
really fast. His speed, his run time's down a little bit this spring, but you got that's another exceptional makeup. This guy would probably be on my... If we had to do best tools...
I'll Belinsky team.
Oh, goodness, I love Quentin Holmes.
Let's take some questions and wrap up this way, because we've already gone about a half hour on this Facebook Live. Thanks, everybody, for joining us.
Could talk all day on Holmes. Yeah, I've got
Matthew David on Twitter asked me, any chance Bukauskas, Beck, or Adam Haseley gets to the White Sox at 11? I think yes.
Bukauskas, Beck, or Haseley?
Or Adam Haseley. I think yes. I think maybe two of those three could be there at 11.
That's the thing. We talk about this uncertainty at the top of the class. Wouldn't be shocked if any of them got there. I would be pretty surprised if Bukauskas was there. The other two I could see happening. But Bukauskas, there's too much love for right now.
Beck might be the most likely. Because when you get in the room with the general managers and all these kind of things, like if you're really measuring Beck and Bubba Thompson, they have similar tools in a lot of ways. And you have more history with Bubba Thompson, you might have a little higher grades on Beck, but you have so much more history on Thompson and so much more wood bat track record. So you could see a guy like Beck go 5 or 4, you could see him slip to 24, 25. That's just what happens
with
high...
It's that certainty, right? Like you're going to, like, each team's going to put these grades on these players, right? But, like, say you have a 6 future grade on Austin Beck's bat. Your certainty, if you're grading the certainty on a 2-8 scale is... 30 or 40.
Right.
So, whereas, like, you might have a 55 on Bubba Thompson, hypothetically. And you might have a 55 certainty on that. Because you've seen him a lot.
Or even
more.
Just a 45, he'd be a grade and a half better than your Beck certainty.
So that's always the question. And then Adam Haseley, you might have a 55 or a 60 on his hit. And you probably have, like, a 60 on your certainty of your evaluation in his hit. So, like, that one seems like... so safe that it's unlikely for him to really fall too far. Like, I've even heard, like, rumors of him in top 5, top 10. Like, there's nothing's going to be surprised. I'm like, he might go really, really high, and I'm not going to be surprised at all.
Right.
Bukauskas, too. Like, Bukauskas, we've had a lot of discussions about Bukauskas where that starter reliever question, and that's not going to go away until he's...
It's the essence of the evaluation.
In the handbook, when he's somebody's number one prospect, that's going to be a paragraph, a debate about him being a starter or reliever. The things I would mention about JB is he is short, but he is not small, mm-hmm. and he is athletic, and he is young for a draft-eligible junior.
All those things are true, I think.
So I think that if you're going to try to project him a little bit, I think those are some things that will give you a little more comfort in projecting him. Another high makeup guy.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Let's go a little lightning round. Alan Pollard Jr., this is a hard lightning round question. Does it concern some teams that Hunter Green is shopping teams he wants to draft based on their philosophies, maybe his headstrong attitude could be of some concern to teams? I would say that him stopping pitching early is of concern to some teams, but I would say that's just more of a symptom of the overall way that it's been handled, the perception of the teams, But that all it takes is one team, and then once he gets into pro ball, he starts building new perceptions. The bottom line is, I do think that he's a high character kid. I think that he is exceptional talent, and I think he's going to be drafted pretty high. There is a chance that players like this slide, Hudson, but short version of your Hunter Green answer, it does appear, I know that's hard, it does appear that him shutting it down early was A, expected, B, doesn't help his draft stock or status.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, people like to complain about these guys and pick them apart, right?
Right.
And you, if you have an issue with them shutting it down, fine. You know, that's a legitimate qualm with this guy. At the end of the day, the talent's going to be the talent, and somebody's going to just say, well, I don't really care. The guy's throwing 100, and we think we can get his breaking ball to a certain level. It seems to me from my reporting is that the Reds may be the highest team on Hunter Green,
right?
And also the team he's least interested in playing for,
right?
So that's
an odd confluence for Hunter Green. So we'll see. 39 days to see how that works out.
I think there's a scenario where he does slide a little bit. Like even if there's a scenario where he's not a top five pick. It's going to depend on the money of it all, because there's going to be a deal somewhere here. There's probably going to be an underslot deal somewhere here, maybe even at 1-1. So you look at it that way. Hypothetically, Pavin Smith goes 1. Hypothetically, right? Say, do the Reds take Brendan McKay, right? And then do the Padres take Green or Mackenzie Gore or Royce Lewis?
Right.
Right. And then if the Rays are hypothetically really big on Kyle Wright or Bukauskas, is Green there at 5?
Right.
Is Austin Peck going to be the pick at 5?
Right.
Like,
there's a lot of scenarios.
There's a scenario where this guy who's number 1 on our rankings right now is not a top 5 pick. So that's...
happened last year with A.J. Puck as well. Very different reasons, I think, but very different players.
And even Kyle Lewis. Kyle Lewis was 11th overall, 12th? Like,
correct, 11th. Bit, yep, you know, it does happen.
There's no certainty at all.
George Ebel writes, Stephen Jennings from DeKalb County High School in Tennessee. Do you think he goes in the first round? I would say probably not in the first round, but he does have a lot of helium.
Yeah.
As far as a guy who tore his right ACL last year in September playing quarterback for his high school football team. Was his right? Yeah, I've got a couple guys on that
one.
So right ACL tear, and then wound up, he's come back quickly and pitching with a knee brace and 2+ pitches at least. Athlete. Good makeup, but when you come back from a knee injury like that, we hear good things about Jennings. I think he's 45 on the list. Don't see him in the first round, but deals can be made.
Only takes one.
Yeah.
Only takes one team.
George also answered when Franco Sanchez asked, who's the purest five-tooler in this draft? George answered Jordan Adell. Jordan Adell's probably pretty close to the best five-tool guy. I mean, Royce Lewis is in that category
there's
as well.
There's a question on here asking to compare Jordan Adell and Austin Beck.
That might not be a lightning round answer.
That's not a lightning round answer. But yeah, I mean, I think that if you're buying into what Jordan Adell has done this spring, which the caveat is the competition is not the same that he faced last summer when he did have more swing and miss.
And he's gotten better.
He has absolutely gotten better. If you look at his performance this spring versus his performance last spring, it's night and day. The guy has 21 home runs and 7 strikeouts.
That's crazy.
He has 21 home runs and 14 singles.
That's Pavin Smith-esque.
He has a lot more home runs than singles.
Yeah.
That's insane.
He's elevating and celebrating a lot. Hat tip to Hunter Green, who taught me that phrase.
I think pure five tools, it's him or Austin Beck. Royce Lewis also in that discussion.
His power is lower than those other two guys, so that's probably why we rank behind him. Chase Tidwell asks, could J.J. Schwartz go to the second round? If he does fall that far, does he go back to school? Chase, I think he'd be excited to go in the second round. He doesn't catch. I feel like I'm negative on J.J. Schwartz, and I apologize for sounding so negative on J.J. Schwartz. I never understood who thought this guy was going to be a first-round pick after last year. After his freshman year, I've talked to scouts and say, after his freshman year, if you thought he could catch and you saw that kind of power, but he does not catch, he hasn't shown consistent power to perform. I don't think, where do we have him, the 200? Do we have him the 200?
I don't believe he's on there.
I don't think he's on the 200.
And there's ways to talk about this, right? Like, is it right for him to ever be discussed as a first-round pick? Probably not. So let's forget about that. What does this guy do?
Right.
This guy crushes mistakes. He shows you streaky power. He's got legitimate home run power.
To all fields if he had that approach.
So
he has
the strength to hit it out anywhere. He's one of the 300 best players in the class. That's a good player. So we don't need to...
That's a great way to put it.
We don't need to say, well, screw him, he's not a first rounder. I mean, like, this guy's a good baseball player.
Yeah, I'm not really saying screw the people.
I'm knocking
the people who thought he was a first rounder in the first place. Coming into the year, there were not scouts who had him that way. Yeah. I think it was just... that's really what gets to me.
Agreed.
The defense is the issue, because he's really a first baseman in college. He doesn't catch much... In college, and probably in Florida this year, he's the third catcher because Mike Rivera was the everyday guy. And when Mike Rivera got hurt, I don't remember how you pronounce the guy's name.
Cole Savary. Mark Cole Savary
is the catcher who catches now. So KJ Harrison and JJ Schwartz were lumped in a category for me coming into the year as right-handed hitting first baseman who it would improve their draft stock a lot if they caught. KJ Harrison actually has still performed and has performed better and is in the top 200. J.J. Schwartz remains a streaky hitter and is less athletic than K.J. Harrison. And K.J. has caught a couple times. And there are scouts I've talked to in the Northwest who see him where you would sign him and send him out as a catcher.
Yeah.
I don't get that sense for J.J. Schwartz. That he's going to be sent out as a catcher. 100%
getting the same.
So I apologize for being negative on J.J. Good kid.
I didn't mean to say that you were criticizing him.
I know, but
I think that's what happens is fans sometimes... Somehow someone writes an article and gives them the wrong perception. I don't think it's us. Honestly, I don't think it's us that has ever really been like J.J. Schwartz's first rounder. But there's a misperception sometimes with some of these players. And that's not fair to J.J. Schwartz. J.J. Schwartz is a good player. He's a top 300 player. That's what it is.
That's a great way to put it. Which of these questions do you want to take last? Jeff Sullivan says, Matt Tabor... Jeff's obviously involved in the Northeast baseball biz.
He's a big
Did you want to talk Weston Bizzle and Mason Hickman? I mean, Weston Bizzle strikes out a lot of guys, but he's a shorter
the
right-hander.
Business. I love Weston Bizzle.
It's a lot of swings and misses.
Not a big time guy for me.
This is no 2013 Tennessee prep class. Let's start out with that right there.
Mason Hickman's solid.
Headed to Vanderbilt. Our reports of the velocity is not necessarily at its best, so...
Yeah, I mean, I think with Mason Hickman, he's a little bit like Luca Dolatri in a little bit of ways. Where I think he could go to school and be an impact performer right away.
I like that comp.
Big physical guy, long and back, big weighted ball guy.
Okay.
Really, really good kid. Mason Hickman a lot.
Charles Santos wants to know where you see Mark, who I assume he's related to.
Yeah, Vientos not the most common last name.
No,
Smith. Mark Vientos. Vientos with him, you're buying a bat. There are questions on his defensive ability long term, where he's going to land, and I think those are legitimate questions. For me, I see him as a third baseman or a corner outfielder. Some have been harsh enough to say he's going to move to first, which I think is a little too much. I think you got to try him at those other ones first because he's got an electric arm. But I think this guy can really hit the ball and do some damage. He hasn't necessarily learned to get to his power to where he's to what you're going to expect from him when he's a man, when he's 23, 24. He's also a 17-year-old draft, okay. So I think I'm a little more comfortable projecting him and Heliot Ramos, two 17-year-old drafts, really, really young players. But I'm a big Mark Vientos fan. I don't see him lasting past the second round. I think he'll probably go either in the back of the first, sandwich round, early second.
Scouting reports, rankings, lists, features. We've got a lot coming in the next month plus here at baseballamerica.com. When it comes to the 2017 draft, this is the guy who's driving the train for us, Hudson Belinsky, but the whole team working on this, J.J. Cooper, Mike Lanana, Carlos Collazo, newest
member. I would single out Carlos's work has really helped us this year.
Yep.
Everyone I think has really done a great job on this. Like Kyle is crushing it in Southern California. Mike just had a really good call yesterday. It was really helped us out in the Southeast.
And Ted Cahill is going to be bringing up the train in Florida and Georgia as well. So
yeah, Teddy's doing good work too, especially with the college players and adding perspective on that. So like honestly, 100%.
Echo
your sentiment that staff is crushing it.
It takes a village to cover the draft. So that's how we do it at Baseball America. That's how we've done it for a long time. That's how we'll keep doing it. We hope you keep consuming it here at baseballamerica.com and on our Facebook page. And if I can call up the read, I'll give you the read to end this thing. but I didn't have the read ready. So I thought it was on my screen, and it's not on my screen. But we are sponsored by all of our podcasts and all of our Facebook Lives by Baseballism, the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. If you're a baseball fan, you need to check out baseballism.com or visit the retail locations in Cooperstown, New York, Scottsdale, Arizona, or their new locations in Chicago and Atlanta. Visit baseballism.com, enter the code BA2017, and save 20% off your order to get shirts like these, hats like this, and all their gear. So for Hudson and for Linwood Webb, I'm John Manuel. See you next time at Baseball America and baseballamerica.com.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit baseballamerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.